Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 13. Rama stealing the boys and calves, text 42. Ita etetra kutratya manmaya mohitetare tavanta eva tatrabdam kridanto vishnuna samam. Etaha, for this reason, ete, these boys with their calves, atra, here, kutratya, where have they come from? Matmaya mohita itare, different from those who are mystified by my illusory potency. Tavan ta tavanta, the same number of boys. Eva, indeed, tatra, there, abdam, for 1 year, kridanta, are playing. Vishnuna samam, along with Krishna. Translation of Prabhupada brought by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Similar number of boys and calves have been playing with Krishna for a whole year, yet they are different from the ones illusioned by my mystic potency. Who are they? Where did they come from? Purport. Although appearing like calves, cows, and coward boys, these were all Vishnu. Actually, they were Vishnu Tattva, not Jiva Tattva. Brahma was surprised. The original coward boys and cows, he thought, are still where I put them last year. So who is it that now is keeping company with Krishna, exactly as before? Where have they come from? Brahma was surprised that his mystic power had been neglected. Without touching the original cows and coward boys kept by Brahma, Krishna had created another assembly of calves and boys for all expansions of Vishnu Tattva. Thus Brahma's mystic power was superseded. Translation, text 43. Thus Brahma, Lord Brahma, thinking and thinking for a long time, tried to distinguish between these two sets of boys, or each separately existing. He tried to understand who is real and who is not real, but he couldn't understand at all. For boy, Brahma was puzzled. The original boys and calves are still sleeping, as I have kept them. He thought, but another set is here playing with Krishna. How has this happened? Brahma could not grasp what was happening, which boys were real and which were not real. Brahma was unable to come to any definite conclusion. He pondered the matter for a long while. How can there be two sets of calves and boys at the same time? Had the boys and calves been created by Krishna? Or has Krishna created the ones lying asleep? Or are both merely creations of Krishna? Brahma thought about the subject in many ways. After I go to the cave and see that the boys and calves are still there, does Krishna go take them away and put them here so that I come here and see them? And does Krishna then take them from here and put them there? Brahma could not figure out how there could be two sets of calves and coward boys exactly alike. Although thinking and thinking, he could not understand at all. So Brahma could not understand what was going on, because we're much more clever than Brahma, so we understand exactly what's going on. So what good is his four heads? He can't understand what we cannot easily understand just by reading the Bhagavatam. Because can we really understand? Do we actually understand? First of all, can we even conceive of how many cowboys and cows or calves were involved in this whole incident? And can we actually conceive how these unlimited cowboys and calves were all, that Krishna had expanded it as, were all Vishnu Tattva, were all Krishna himself? Or how can we understand that Krishna had created the Maya cowherd boys and cows unlimitedly and put them into a cave simultaneously? And what happened to the actual cowherd boys? Where did they go? They don't even talk about that. They're not very important. This whole incident is meant, of course, this is practically the beginning of the 10th canto, create a little bit of a mood of awe and reverence, some appreciation, that although we're going to hear about Krishna killing one demon at a time, Dhenukasura, Agasura, Putana, whatever, but here is a display of Vishnu, of Krishna's prowess, that even though Brahma, the creator of the whole universe, was completely bewildered by. One problem is that we're not bewildered at all. We're bewildered, but we're not bewildered by Krishna's mystic power. We take everything for granted. Big deal, so Krishna is in everyone's heart, giving everyone remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. What's the big deal about that? What's the big deal? He's put the sun in its orbit, this little tiny orb, and he's moving it exactly on time in an orbit. Big deal. What's the big deal about that? So that's the materialistic or demoniac mentality. We take someone insignificant as very significant. Someone can stand on his finger and we think he's become God or worthy of our respect and adoration. We, of course, we've been trained up psychologically not to appreciate people who can do things that are relatively wonderful. And certainly we don't consider them God at all. We just think they're wonderful. And as far as Krishna, whatever he does, we don't take it so seriously. He may be God, but it's no big deal. It's like when Kamsa and the Nectar of Devotion, he was talking to a Kaurava and he said, what are you making a big deal about Krishna just because he defeated one harmless water snake, Kaliya serpent? So he lifted one pebble, Govardhan Hill. Why are you making such a big deal out of him? Who is this Krishna, Kamsa said? What is his power? And then he heard that he had killed one elephant named Kulivapita. He said, so big deal. I have these great warriors, Mushtika, Chanura. So what can Krishna do? And then he heard that they got killed too. He said, well, actually, maybe this coward boy is something special, so maybe I should go to Vrindavan and inflict pains on all the residents there. But I can't leave here, he said, because my heart is palpitating out of fear of this boy. So that's Krishna's Mahamaya. It's like when Krishna confronted Chanura and Balaram confronted Toshala. Krishna was trying to convince them that actually this fight is not a good idea. Because we're just little coward boys and we play with our friends in the forest and sometimes we wrestle. But you're a big, strong wrestler as big as mountains. The audience would not be very pleased by watching this match between us. So then Chanura said, well, what are you trying to, you know, pretend? He said, we know who you are. You've created the whole universe. You and your brother. So And we're a big, strong wrestler, so it seems like a fair match. So that's called illusion. It's a little ant challenging the elephant. Coming, come, you know, come here, let's duke it out. And everyone's watching thinking, this ant is crazy. But he's proud. And therefore he's covered by illusion. So we're in the same situation. We're thinking, material nature is not going to touch me. I'm going to live forever in this body. I'm making so many plans for the future. No one's going to stop me. I'm going to be successful in this world and somehow. So we're like the little ant challenging the elephant, much bigger elephant, the dinosaur. Tyrannosaurus Rex. And we think we're going to overcome Krishna's energies. We can't even fight against his time, which is just one of his unlimited energies. Still, we think it's a challenge, and we're going to try and escape the jurisdiction of time, and we're going to be the first ones since time immemorial to come out victorious. Therefore, avyakta kalatvam, one who's actually serious, they don't waste any time. And those who are not serious, they think they have unlimited time to waste. Because what can Krishna do to me? What is his prowess? So he has a little energy called time. But I'm going to defeat time. I'm taking my vitamin pills. I'm doing my exercise. I even go for a walk. So what could time do to me? So here Brahma, he's testing Brahma, who even if we don't believe, at least we can put aside our doubt whether Lord Brahma exists or not. We don't have to accept and we don't have to reject. But theoretically speaking, Brahma, who's created the universe, he couldn't comprehend what Krishna was doing. So even when we read the Bhagavad-gita, how do we understand what Krishna is doing with our tiny little brain? We can't even create, you know, we're on the level when we try to make a model of the Earth planet. We don't even know what the Earth looks like, but to speak of making a model of it. We can't even draw a plan of Ljubljana. And we're thinking we're the creators of the universe. A little bit more instruction and engineering. I can do it. I know I can do it. It just takes a little practice, that's all. No, we can't conceive of how powerful is Lord Brahma, and yet he's completely bewildered. But we read the Bhagavatam, we read it, and we think, well, this is just, this is, yeah, of course, I understand everything that's going on here. So that's our problem, is that we're not in awe and reverence about anything, even Krishna. We can't be in awe and reverence about Krishna. How can we be really in awe and reverence about anything or anyone? We take everyone for granted. We see everyone in relationship to this gross and subtle body, their only value and their only power that's worthy of anything is how much they satisfy my senses. If not, then we just, you know, they're just a fairy tale as far as I can see. Nice to read about, interesting, kind of like going to the movies and watching some science fiction movie, makes me feel good, expands my imagination. So Srimad Bhagavatam is kind of like interesting topic, but I don't take it seriously. Otherwise, if we remember the Bhagavatam, we remember how great Krishna is, then of course it'll change our mood. And that's called devotional service, beginning of devotional service. Trinadapi sunichena, become a little humble that we're not the center of the universe. As I mentioned before, Prabhupada was talking to Tamal Krishna Maharaj one time, 1969, I believe. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj at that time was a temple commander in Los Angeles. And they were on La Cienega Boulevard. So Prabhupada said, he was talking to Tamal Krishna Maharaj and said that there's a planet in the spiritual world that is so big, it's called Goloka Vrindavan, that all the Vaikuntha planets can fit into it. And there are unlimited Vaikuntha planets. There are more Vaikuntha planets than the amount of mustard seeds you can fit into a big bag of mustard seeds. And they all fit into Goloka Vrindavan. That's how big it is. And each Vaikuntha planet is bigger than all the material universes put together. And sometimes, in the spiritual sky, amidst all these unlimited, huge, unlimited Vaikuntha planets in Goloka Vrindavan, a little cloud appears, and that's the material universe. And Lord Krishna expands himself as Garbhadaksha Vishnu and lies down in that ocean, Karnadakshay Vishnu, and lies down in the causal ocean, and from the pores of his body he breathes out unlimited universes. More universes than there are raindrops during a thunderstorm. And in the smallest, and he expands himself, Karnadakshay Vishnu expands himself into each one of the universes as Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And in the smallest of all the universes, which is only some billions of miles across, this small but beautiful universe that we're in, then Garbhadakshay Vishnu from his navel sprouts the lotus flower, and on the top of the lotus flower, Brahma is born. And Brahma creates within the lotus stem of the flower he was born from the material planets that we're seeing around us. And in one of those planets, specifically actually, in Bhumandala, there is one place called Jambudweep. And in Jambudweep, there's one section of Jambudweep, a little part of Bardvarsha, one of the Varshas. And in one part of Bardvarsha, there are five different continents, and one of them is North America. And in North America, there are so many different, there are different countries. One of them is the United States. In the United States, there are so many different states. One of them is California. And in California, there are so many different cities. One of them is Los Angeles. In Los Angeles, there are so many streets and houses and roads. One of them is called La Cienega Boulevard. And on La Cienega Boulevard, there are thousands of houses. And one of them is called the Hare Krishna Temple. In the Hare Krishna Temple, there's one temple commander, and he thinks he's controlling everything. So as Prabhupada once said, he said, you know, maybe relatively speaking amongst ourselves, someone is better in something than someone else. But compared to Krishna, we're all completely insignificant. We have no significance whatsoever. The only thing big about us is our false ego. That may be expanding over the whole universe. But other than that, we have no significance whatsoever. We're just imagining that we're something very special. Of course, because Krishna is very kind, everyone is special to him. Because Krishna has unlimited love and affection, and therefore he can have unlimited affection for every unlimited jiva souls. Other than that, the jiva soul, the real problem is his lack of appreciation for Krishna specifically, how great Krishna is, and therefore because we don't even take Krishna as being great, what to speak of anyone else? What can they do compared to Krishna to invoke some appreciation within us? Practically nothing. No one could really invoke, because if we can't appreciate Krishna, how can we appreciate anyone else who compared to Krishna is insignificant? And yet Krishna, who's unlimited, he appreciates even the infinitesimal soul. Even the infinitesimal soul is greater than he is. So that's the difference between being in Krishna consciousness and being in Maya. If we're in Krishna consciousness, then we'll appreciate all the living entities. What to speak of Krishna? And if we're in Krishna consciousness, if we're in Maya, we won't appreciate Krishna, we won't appreciate anyone. The only thing we'll appreciate is our false ego. That will be outstanding as far as we're concerned. Even people will sacrifice their own existence, their own lives, just to satisfy their false ego, to serve their false ego, like Jarasandha. When Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhima went to challenge Jarasandha to a fight, they went disguised as Brahmins. Because Jarasandha, although he's a demon, he followed the Vedic culture. To become a big demon, you also have to follow the laws of nature. Otherwise, it's not possible. You can't become a big demon and be a big sense gratifier. So Jarasandha was very strict, and one of his ways he was strictly giving charity to the Brahmins. So Krishna, Bhima, and Arjuna came dressed as Brahmanas in order to beg charity from Jarasandha. So Jarasandha noticed that on their shoulders they had marks of a bow, and their voices were very deep, like that of a Kshatriya, not of a Brahmin. And the Kshatriyas happened to be around, for us, 3 meters tall. The Brahmins were only like 2 meters tall. So they said, these are pretty big Brahmins. He looked at them, he said, I think I've seen them before somewhere, I can't remember. I usually remember everyone's face, but I can't remember these people's faces. So then Krishna started to praise those who have given charity in the past, like Shibi, what pigeon had come in order to take shelter of Shibi because he was pursued by a hawk. And Shibi promised that he would protect, King Shibi promised he would protect the pigeon who took shelter of him, because Kshatriyas would actually protect their citizens, including even the pigeon. So the hawk agreed, because Shibi said, I'll give you as amount of flesh that the pigeon weighs and to compensate for him, for my own body. So the pigeon said, okay. A very intelligent. Hawk said, okay. So Shibi cut off some flesh from his body and put it on the pigeon was on one side and his flesh was on the other, but it didn't equal to the pigeon's weight. So King Shibi kept on cutting flesh from his body to equal the weight of the pigeon, but it never weighed the pigeon. So finally, Shibi said on the scale, it says, you can have my whole body. And then the pigeon and the hawk revealed themselves as Indra and Agni and blessed the Shibi. And then there's Ranti Devi, who had given in charity his food away to the point that he was almost going to die of hunger and thirst. And so many persons who had given charity. So Jarasandha said, yes. But why was he going to give in charity? Because Krishna said they sacrificed their bodies in order to get immortal fame. So Jarasandha thought, yeah, I'll give up my own head, he told Krishna, Bhima, and Arjuna. I'll give up my own, I'll even give you my head if you want that in charity. Because that way he'd get a perpetual fame. So to get a little reputation, we're willing to sacrifice our own existence to serve my false ego, thinking that my name will be chanted even after I leave this body. We are so much in love with this body, we're so much enamored by it, that we're willing to sacrifice our own spiritual existence, our being eternally happy, full of bliss, and in a loving relationship with the Supreme, all-attractive person, if I can satisfy my false ego. So that's generally known as madness. But of course, we're all mad, so we don't. And it's just, since we're living amongst all crazy people, we're just normal. To get a little fame and a little bit of satisfaction from this body, we're willing to sacrifice our eternal life for it. The hope that maybe even after I leave my body, it'll still be glorified for how wonderful it was. Although no one is glorified. I mean, can you name who is Brahma in the last life of Brahma? Is it on the tip of your tongue? You just forgot. Who cares? Who really cares who Brahma was? He's gone. And this Brahma will be gone too. And what to speak of our poor little selves? Therefore, to sacrifice our existence, to serve our false ego, our spiritual existence, is not a good idea. Therefore, a little bit of humility, hearing about these pastimes, and even if we can't completely understand them, at least we should understand we don't understand them. And become a little humble how inadequate our intelligence is, that even something's right before us in the form of the Bhagavatam, even that we went through the first 9 cantos, we still can't understand what's going on. We're so much bewildered by the illusory energy that we think we're enlightened. That's how bewildered we are. Although we're completely in ignorance, we think we're very intelligent. I think we know everything. And my final judgment on everything should be everyone's final judgment. Or else they're demons. If they don't agree with me, they must be in Maya. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.